Well, so this past week, I have been hearing from many of you about taking walks. It is one of the activities that is allowed to us, it seems, that's left to us. Families have been heading out for walks on the Butler Freeport Trail or in other parks where there are hiking trails. Sometimes it's just a stroll around the backyard or over to the grocery store. Some of our residents who live down at Concordia have been telling me that they are allowed to walk the halls. They keep social distance, wave to each other from at least 6 feet away, but that ability to at least get up and go out is very meaningful, to experience what is beyond us and beyond our space, I should say, where we are quarantined. And I bring this up because if you are able to do it, if your body allows you to walk, one of the ways that I read this week about how to experience this gospel story is to quite literally walk with it, to kind of act it out. Because one of the things that drives the drama of the story is the sense of journey and walking, as well as stopping. The contrast between being in motion and stopping and attending tells us something about what Jesus, the risen Jesus, is doing for these two disciples whom he meets on the road to Emmaus, and also for us. How Jesus walks with us in our life's journey, but also holds space and grace for moments of enormous sadness and disappointment in our lives. So Cleopas and the other disciple, some think it may have been Mrs. Cleopas, are walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus that first Easter evening. They're talking as they walk when a stranger approaches them. It's Jesus, but they don't know that. But he knows them, presumably, and he also knows what is going on with them and in Jerusalem. Though they ask, "Are you the only stranger who does not know what has taken place?" He's no stranger, not to them, not to the things that have happened. But it's interesting to me that he goes ahead and asks them what's going on anyway. What things? Tell me what's going on from your perspective. What are you talking about as you walk along? What are you discussing as you go?
Not touching it.
He knows it all, but he wants them to say it in their words. And then they stop. They freeze the moment. They stand still. The walk on pause, looking sad. And what pours forth in that moment of stopping is a story about a prophet, mighty in word and deed before God and people, a story about arrest and crucifixion and torture and death, a story about resurrection, maybe. There was no Christ is risen, risen indeed, for the disciples who first heard the news. It was risen, maybe. But what is there in that stopped moment on the road, most of all, is a story about Cleopas and the others' disciples' dashed hopes. He was condemned to death and crucified, but we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. We had hoped that he would set our country free. We had hoped that he would usher in a reign of justice and peace. We had hoped for freedom from tyranny and death, and we were disappointed. And now some women have seen a vision of angels who said he was alive, and some of us went to the tomb and found it as the women had said, but we were disappointed again because they did not see him. It's a remarkable speech, actually, that they give to Jesus, full of human grief. One of the longest in the scriptures in which the disciples get to talk back to Jesus. Of course, they don't know that that's what they're doing, but Luke includes it. The journey we were on did not end as we had hoped. The Messiah we were following did not turn out to be the Messiah we thought he would be. And Jesus receives all of that. The full force of their disappointment, the full force of their grief, and the full force of their disillusionment. And yes, eventually, he challenges them on it, talks about himself in the scriptures, but first he lets them name and lament all that they've gone through. And I think that's an interesting thing for us to take in on this third Sunday of Easter, this Easter journey, which is so unlike any other Easter journey we have ever had. Because even as quarantine brings us out of our houses and apartments to walk streets and hiking paths, and parks, it's also bringing us to moments of stop dead still disappointments. We had hoped that we would have been able to make a trip, celebrate a birthday, or say goodbye to a dying friend. We had hoped that there would be a final game or a concert, a performance or a prom or a graduation. We had hoped to build a business and see it flourish. We had hoped that if we played by the rules, worked hard, and supported ourselves, we would never have to find ourselves in the food bank line. We had hoped that in the year 2020, when science seems to be at an apex, we would be able to live without a gnawing fear of death. Anybody said anything like that to God lately? See, in working through disappointments like this, it can become tempting to try to manage them and squash them down by trying to compare them to what others might be experiencing. So we tell ourselves we're disappointed because we cannot have the concert or the graduation or the prom. But that's not nearly what someone else might be experiencing who loses their jobs. Oh, so we might be disappointed in not being able to attend the performance, but that's not nearly as bad as facing financial ruin. And that even is not nearly as bad as death. So I shouldn't complain, right? Anybody said that lately? But the reality is that all of these losses are real losses. They're just different kinds of loss. And trying to evaluate them as if they were all the same thing, as if they were all on some kind of continuum to be compared to one another, isn't true to the real nature of each loss. And in fact, it might even be the case, I think, that by trying to compare losses and consequently suppress disappointment, we're actually setting up a structure by which we can try to justify ourselves before God and others, saying, okay, we're doing this quarantine thing in the right way. Setting ourselves up for being the right kind of people who have the right kind of complaints and grieve the right things and don't get bogged down with minutiae. But loss is loss, and real people suffer them and suffer different things. And yes, they're different. Don't get me wrong. They're different and have different forms of suffering with different kinds of longer lasting consequences, shorter or longer. But real people experience them in real time. And if there's something about this story that I think Jesus has to say, the risen Jesus has to say about loss, it's this. Jesus is not interested in coming to people who've got all the right ideas. Cleopas and Mrs. Cleopas have some things which they do not understand. Rather, Jesus is interested in coming to real people, to people with real disappointments, with real disillusionments, and consequently real grief. Cleopas and the other one got out of Holy Week, you might say, in reasonable shape. And that was not a guarantee, given the political situation in Jerusalem at the time. Jesus had been tortured and killed. And I have no doubt that his disciples were in the sights of the authorities too. But Cleopas and that other one, they got out of Jerusalem. They were able to take a 7-mile walk. They had a home to go back to and bread to eat when they got there. Their biggest problem on the road to Emmaus is that they had hoped that he would redeem Israel. But that wasn't happening as they thought. joining them on their journey, and standing still with them, Jesus holds space for their disillusionment. And it's only from that real place, letting them tell their story, that Jesus can open them up to another way of thinking. Redemption, not as they imagine it, but as God has imagined it through the scriptures. Redemption, not as they had hoped, but as God has planned. His cross, not as the end of hope, but as its beginning. And so all these walks that we're taking through the halls, on the streets, through the parks, on the paths, let them be metaphors for the journey that we are on right now, a journey with Jesus. And it's hard to say where it's all going or what will happen along the way, but we do know who's with us on them. The risen Jesus is walking with us, and every step we take now happens under the shadow of his cross and in the light of his empty tomb. This is his Easter work, to walk with us even when we cannot recognize him, to stop with us so we can tell him our stories, and to keep going, to stay with us until the end, until his risen life burns in our hearts, and we go running in hope and joy. Amen.